You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and welcome to our June Roundup webinar. I should say this is June 2019 Roundup webinar, and this is where we get together every single month. I know it's July right now, but we're talking about what happened in June. We talk about some market stats, some interesting news or tidbits around Denver, and we usually go through one or two case studies. So today, market stats, a good tidbit on lending, and a house hack case study in Arvada, and then an Aurora rental we'll talk about. And today, I've got my co-host with me, Joe Massey of Castle & Cook. Welcome, Joe.
Chris, always great to see you. Thanks so much for having me on the show, man. Always appreciate it. It's one of my favorite things to do every month, get here and talk about the market.
I know, it's fun. So if you guys don't know who we are, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a real estate agent at Your Castle Real Estate. I focus on investment properties, primarily helping people buy house hacks, nomad properties, and traditional rental properties. And then Joe Massey is a senior loan officer at Castle & Cook, and he's my go-to lender.
I just do loans. I'm not as fancy as you with all this stuff, like house hacking and all this investor friendly. I just do loans. I just show up every day.
Yeah, but you do the loans for those properties.
I do the loans. That's right. That's right. I do a lot of loans. Make sure that things run smoothly for you and for your whole clientele.
All right. So jumping into curveball. Before we jump into market stats, I just added the slide about an hour ago. We officially got the next Denver Investor Success Summit date locked in, and that is going to be Saturday, October 12th. And I believe this is like the 13th or 14th one that they've done, Joe. It's getting
that
up there, right?
Sounds about right. 14. We used to do them twice a year. Now we just do them once a year. We've been doing it for 10 years now. So this has got to be 14 or 16, something like that. Yeah. We've done a number of these. Yeah, it's a great event. If you have not come, add this to your calendar. We're going to have six or eight different keynote speakers covering the real estate market, trends, what's happening, how to deal with property managers, how to work with clients, how to get clients, how to get your first investment property. Really a lot of great topics for this.
And at the time of this recording, we do not have the website and registration page up and running. Should be up within about 2 weeks of the time we're recording this. So make sure you keep your eye out for denverISS.com. And in the meantime, go ahead and block off Saturday, October 12th on your calendar. It's an all-day event. Registration is about $20. And something new that the Pine guys are doing this year who are hosting it is they have a certain cutoff date. I think it's the end of August, but don't bet money on that. That if you register before then, they'll give you a 2-for-1 deal because they won't get a lot of people there. So if you buy a ticket before then, great. You get 2 tickets. So you can bring your spouse, or if you're an agent, you can bring a client, or if you're an investor, you can bring your business partner because it can save you $20, and every dollar saved is a good dollar saved.
That's right. Dollar saved is a dollar earned.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say.
A dollar saved is one more dollar I can have for my down payment on my next property.
Yes. So jumping into the market updates here. So this is talking about the June market right here. And what we like to do when we look at data here, we got a big table pulled up on the screen. If you can't see it, we're going to highlight the really important ones out here. And what this month shows, it's actually a little bit confusing. And actually, what I was starting to say was we'd like to compare this June with previous June data. So we usually don't like to do a month with previous month because that doesn't take into account for seasonality. Buying a place or selling a place in Denver in March is very different than buying or selling a place come November. So seasonality has a big impact on the numbers we see. So that's why we compare June 19 to June 2018 in this case. So the this month's results are actually a little bit confusing. If you listen to last month's Roundup webinar, you'll probably hear us talking about how much under contracts were up. So that's how many properties were up at the end of last May. It's something like 11 or 12%, I believe, that were under contract from this May compared to last May. Well, what happens when properties are under contract, Joe?
They close eventually.
Yes, eventually. So normally, you know, somewhere between 30 to 45 days is pretty typical. So since we saw those under contracts in May, I was expecting to see a higher amount of sold properties or closed properties in June. And the mouse cursor is highlighting it there. So in June 19, we had about 5,200 sold properties, which is actually less than what happened in June 2018 of about 6,100. So that's about a 14% decrease in sold properties. So this surprised me seeing this, Joe. Surprised you?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it's a function of two things. One, lenders are really busy right now. I am hearing and read an article the other day, the average time for an average lender to close is now extended up to 47 days.
Is that a Denver stat or nationwide?
Nationwide, okay. Nationwide.
Wow,
you know,
that
here
long?
And here, my team, you know, we're still averaging 21 days from beginning to end. But as an industry, that number has been creeping up, and it's up to 47 days. So I think it's interesting that sales were down 14%, but it may simply be that things are taking a little bit longer. We're going to see an uptick in the month of July. I don't know yet because we're not there yet. But certainly, again, we talk about it all the time. The sky is not falling, nothing to panic about. I think it's just taking a little bit longer for lenders to get people through the pipeline right now.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I've got a very narrow view of the market from the deals that we do. And, yeah. You know, a lot of deals we do with you and we usually close, I mean, 10 to 24 days is kind of the range we typically do. So I'm used to, hey, we get in there, we go fast. And a lot of people aren't like that. So I'm hoping, and I shouldn't say hoping, I'm projecting, my best guess is that we will see next month, we're doing the July roundup when we got these numbers, that we'll see sold up because the under contracts for this June are up about 11%. Under contracts for last May were up around 10 or 11, 12%. So those properties eventually have to close.
Right.
So I think July will see uptick in sold properties. That is my best guess. Other stuff is kind of the stuff we've been talking about the last couple months. The overall inventory is still trending up. It's about 28% higher this June compared to last June. So that's about 9,500 total properties compared to about 7,400 properties last year. And then, of course, days on markets are creeping up because, hey, more inventory. So that's what happens. The other thing we're starting to see is just concessions are starting to go up a little bit as well, which we've talked about in the past. So if you're out there buying, be aggressive on your offers, but especially be aggressive on those inspection objections. That's where we've noticed the biggest difference in this market shift the last 6 months is getting to get really aggressive with our inspection objections and getting a lot more concessions and repairs back from the seller. Now, we don't always do it, but comparing the last 6 months to the 6 months in 2018, we're seeing way more of concessions on there. And are you seeing that too, Joe? Because you see a lot more deals on the lending side than I do and a lot bigger sample size.
Yeah, I am. I'm seeing a lot more concessions. And where this is reflected on the chart here, a year ago, the average close price to list price was 100.44. So that means if a home was listed for $100,000, on average, it was selling for $100,440. So you were actually having to, on average, pay more for a property last year. This year, close price to list price is 99.62. So last year I had to pay a 0.44% premium. This year I'm getting a 0.38% discount. Year over year, that's a 0.8% variance that I'm able to get nearly 1% off of a property this year as compared to last year. So I think that's a concession right there. And if we look at this average sales price, $499,000, 1% of that, $4,998, I'm able to save almost $5,000 that I can get off the price this year compared to last year. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, that I think the market is really on sale right now. And this is a function of there's more inventory now, less inventory in the past. You can get the seller to give a little bit when they're worried about selling their home. So just something to keep in mind.
I agree. And I think the other thing going on, of course, you know, like 95% of our transactions are on the buy side and yours are 100%. Mm-hmm. But see, I see mostly buy side. Since, we're buying investment properties and we usually sell if it's to get some equity out or do 1031. And I think what's going on from just talking to other agents and the listing agents we're under contracts with is that, you know, sellers' expectations and a lot of agents' expectations have not come back to reality with the market. People still trying to push the market are very optimistic about sales prices.
Yep.
And so they're pricing their houses very aggressively. And I say aggressively, meaning like optimistically trying to get top dollar. And so I think a lot of those properties, a lot of those properties are sitting on the market. And then what happens is they sit on the market for a few weeks. Well, they get stale. They drop the price. So if you're on the sell side, make sure you price your house correctly. Now, from the buy side, like what me and Joe mostly do, then go out there and look for those properties that are sitting out there for a while because the sellers, whether it's the sellers or the agents or both, they need their expectations aligned with the market sometimes. And so if you come in 30 days, 40, 50 days and them sitting on the market, the average seller who is not an investor, they're just an owner rock, They got emotions. They got family. They got jobs. That is an extremely stressful and emotional roller coaster for them. Come in there with a good aggressive offer, not 80 cents on the dollar, but a good aggressive offer, and you might see some wiggle room in that price, and you should see some wiggle room on the inspection objections.
Because that's what exactly we're doing. Right.
So moving forward to the next slide. Here we go. So this is the chart that shows the month over month fee, how much inventory, how much active inventory there is in the market, and how much closed inventory happened. So if you guys have seen this in the past, you know, 10 years ago, tons of inventory, and a lot of times the month or the sold properties per month were either like $4,000 or $5,000. Well, inventory has come down tremendously since 10 years ago, and the number of sold properties have gone up a little bit, but nothing like the inventory. So there's a red line that I know a lot of you can't see, but I did that showing where we are right now with this month's inventory, which is about 9,500 units. These are single family properties. Go all the way back. The last time we had this much inventory, not just in June, but anywhere in the market, was going all the way back to like May, June, July of 2013. So about 6 years ago. So this is how much inventory has creeped up. Now, as Joe said earlier, that does not mean the sky is falling. That does not mean we're in a buyer's market yet. Because if you go look at the average inventory for the month of June, it's about 16,500. So right around there, based on data I've seen from your castle, that's where they kind of their best guess for what a balanced market would be between, hey, buyers and sellers are kind of equal footing. So we've gone from these super extreme lows of, you know, 7,000 properties on inventory in June, maybe 6,000 some months, up to 9,500. So while we've been sitting in this, it feels like the brakes have just been slammed. But in the bigger picture of things, they haven't. We're still in a seller's market, and sellers and buyers are all adjusting to this. So things are starting to slow down, but prices are still increasing, just not as fast.
Yeah, this is such a great chart. I mean, we talk about it every month, but this is the difference between where we're at and a balanced market. This is still a very strong seller's market. If we get all the way back over here, right, this is now a buyer's market.
And he's pointing back to like 2008, 2009, we're at 20,000 plus inventory.
Yeah. So buyers out there or listeners on the podcast, this current market right now with 9,000 homes on the market, still a great time to sell if you have a lot of equity in your property, but still a very good time to buy as well because we are in a little bit of a transition right now, which you can see that we've got more inventory than we've had over the last 6 years. So great time to buy, still a great time to sell, but we are not to that point that it's a true balanced market yet.
So, one more note on the slide I put in here. The record high for June is about 32,000 properties in June of 2006. The record low is about 6,200 in June 2015. So we're seeing about 9,500 now. Are we a lot closer to the record high of 32,000 or the record low of 6,200? We're a lot closer to the record low.
I'd say the low.
Yeah.
What is the record low, Alex?
That'll be 6,200.
Oh, perfect. I'll take additional stats for $200, please.
So this is a chart. This is actually showing, we haven't covered this chart very often on the Roundup podcast, but it's actually showing year over year. And so I want to show this to you because we've been talking about how the market's been changing. And, you know, we're halfway through the year now in 2019. Believe it or not, we're halfway through right now. So up all over the year from 2019, 2018 year over year, we're about 28% higher inventory compared for the entire year. New listings are up about 6% compared to this time in 19 to this time in 18. Our days on market, they're up 25% for the average. So going from 24 to 30 days on average, it's not even a week right there. And the number of sold so far, it was about 28,300 in 2018. In 2019, it was 27,500. That's not even a 3% difference right now in the difference sold. So we're talking about how the market is shifting a little bit. But when you hear a 3% difference in the number of properties that sold, doesn't make it sound like nearly as dramatic as a lot of the headlines we see.
That's not that exciting. And I want to go back one too. Days on market has increased 66.6%. this is an indication that it is taking two-thirds longer to sell a home today than it did last year. Should I be panicked about that?
No, because it went from 6 days median to 10 days median.
That's right. So the stat is correct, right? 66%. It's two-thirds as long for me to sell a home on the median scale, but it went from 6 days to 10 days. That is not something to panic about. The sky is not falling. And oh my God, we're slowing down. We're selling less homes this year than we did last year. Yeah, 3% less. All right. So instead of selling 28,000 homes year to date last year, we sold 27,500. There's a difference of about 800. That's not a big deal, guys. Not a big deal.
And so far for the numbers sold, 2019 is up over 2016 and 2015, which were around 26,000 and change up at this point. 2018, 2017, right around the 28,000s. So all very, very similar. I want to go back to the days on market because it's got the average listed and the median. So the average is at 30 days for this year. The median is for 10 days. So the average is taking all the properties out there and averaging them together. The median is the middle. So that means, if I remember my like sixth grade math correctly, that 50% of properties are selling faster than 10 days and 50% are selling greater. But then we're seeing an average that's much higher. Well, to me, that says properties are still flying off the market if they're priced correctly and marketed correctly. We go on there and we put offers in on a new property list on Thursday, and we put our offers in over the weekend or Monday. It's a very different bidding experience because there's usually a couple other offers coming in at that time compared to if we're looking at a property that's been on the market for a few weeks. So when it's been on the market for a few weeks, we're usually the only people right now talking to the agent. And so a lot of times we're focusing on properties that have been sitting on the market for a while because there's not that competition. The properties that are getting closed really quickly, they're priced correctly, and there's a lot of competition. That's harder for us, especially as investors, to compete with. We're looking for hopefully a little bit of wiggle room and getting some equity or some price, where your normal retail owner-occupant, they don't really care about cap rates and cash flow.
They don't. They just want a nice place to live, and they're generally willing to pay top dollar for it.
All right, so last step before we move on here. So the average sold price for the whole Denver metro area for 2019 so far is about $487,000. In 2018, it was about $479,000. So prices have not decreased. They've not flattened out. They're still going up. So about, 1.5%? Which is very different from 18 to 17, which is like close to 10%. So like we said, I've used this analogy numerous times. I can't think of a better one. If you can, let me know, and I'll give you guys a new one on the podcast. But we've had the pedal to the metal the last 3-4 years in the market, and now we're taking our foot off the gas. So we're still accelerating. We're just not redlining the tachometer to go as fast as we possibly can, which is actually really good for the overall market health.
I think that's a great analogy. We're still moving forward, but we're not burning up all the gas in the engine, right?
Exactly. And something else, we'll be doing some detailed models on this in the near future because this is something that we're taking an opportunity with a lot of our clients right now. Hey, they bought a property, whether it's a rental property or their primary residence 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. What's happened? Lots of equity increase. So people that want to build up longer-term cash flow retirement, one of the best ways to get there is to actually either sell or refinance one of your current properties, take the equity and use it to go buy 2, 3, 4, 5 other properties. So if you're out there seeing one's position, like, oh man, I can't find quite all this amazing cash flow. Cool. I get that. It's not like it was 6 years ago, but you got this amazing market gift, which is probably $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 of equity. So we'll be talking about ways on how to utilize that, the pros and cons, and how that impacts your long-term goals of cash flow for retirement and financial independence.
And something to keep in mind, we're going to be teaching a new class that cash flow is not everything. Cash flow is great. And I'm the king of saying, hey, you got to have positive cash flow. But one thing we're going to start dispelling is the rumor that you've got to make $500 a month in cash flow or $1,000 a month in cash flow or the 1% rule. We're going to have a new class that's going to show you, hey, you can break even or make just a little bit of money on your cash flow and ultimately make a lot of money in real estate. So we're going to have a great upcoming class on that. So watch the schedule for that.
The RO, Return on Investment Quadrant, cash flows and everything. If the next one's scheduled August 6th.
Yep.
And I realize this podcast gets dated, so just go to our calendar, Joe's calendar, and you'll see whatever future one is on there.
Yep.
So quickly talking about the showing trends. So this is internal Yourcastle data where they track their agents' listings and then how many showings that we're seeing. So for 2019, we're at about 13, 14 showings for the month of June in 2019. The last couple of years, we've been at like 14 to 16. So like probably about two more showings on average per property. And so normally for this time of year, all the showings decrease because of seasonality. So we can expect showings to go down. Why? Because inventory is up. So if there's that same amount of buyers out there, they have more properties to look across. It becomes a simple math problem.
Yeah. Let me also touch on that. Why can we expect showings to go down? Because it happened last June. And it happened the June before, and it happened the June before, and it happened every June since the beginning of time. Showings generally slow down in June. That is not a reason to panic, regardless of what the newspaper says.
So we're going to, I know a lot of you guys can't see this, but there's a new chart that Yourcastle put out just a couple weeks ago. And I'm going to read my notes here to make sure I get this right, because I'm still digesting this one. So what it says on here is, we all know that real estate is a seasonal business. And this chart just emphasizes that. Showings and listings follow similar patterns, but the showing activity seems to come a month or two before the listings become active, as the sellers take their cues from buyers' activities. So we've got a yellow bar chart on here that shows the total showings out there. So we can see actually how many showings are all across Yourcastle listings and agents. And we got a purple line that shows the number of active listings. So in June 19, right around just over about 4,100 active listings. And if we go back to June 18, we're at probably, what's that, 4,200, 4,300, a little bit higher.
Just barely.
Yeah. So showings are approximately about the same. I mean, nothing significant. That's what, maybe 3% difference. Now, the active listings, though, last June, we were at about 280. This June, we're about 320, 330. So showings are about the same, but active listings are up, which makes total sense on the previous chart we showed. And when you take into account seasonality and the number of showings, nothing's indicating that we're about to drop off a cliff.
No, it's just same or a little bit more showings, quite a few more properties on the market equals less showings per property.
Yeah. And going back to that just simple math, dividing a number by a number, and numbers will change.
Yep.
So, this was a good email you sent out. Think about a month ago. It wasn't the month of June. I remember that because this is actually when I forwarded out to my list on the Denver Real Estate Investing Newsletter. And it was titled, Interest Rates Are Up. I'm sorry, Interest Rates Are Low and Inventory Is Up. I'll let you explain this one, Joe.
My favorite writer actually put this together. So if you haven't seen the news lately, you might have missed two really important factors in the Denver real estate market. So number one, interest rates have been decreasing recently. Now, I know that we're in July right now, but we're doing the June roundup. So as of the June 7th survey, the Freddie Mac 30-year average interest rate was 3.86%. All right. And inventory was at a 6-year high with more than 8,700 new listings on the market in the month of May. All right. So that's important to remember. Interest rates are down. Inventory is up. What does that mean for us? That means that in 2018, the median price was $451,000. 2019, median price is $470,000. So we take that median price of 18 with the median or average interest rate of 4.62, median price of 2019, and that average interest rate of 3.82, and we're going to get the average principal and interest payment on a home in Denver in 2018 was $1,853. The average principal and interest payment on a median priced home in Denver this year, $1,756. So the median monthly payment has gone down by $100 a month over the last 12 months, and prices have gone up roughly $20,000. So think about that for a minute, guys. Interest rates are down. Prices are up. Homes are more expensive now than they were last year, but they don't cost as much. How can that be, Chris?
Well, the power of financing.
That's exactly right. The power of what it costs for me to get my loan, I can borrow the money at a cheaper dollar amount. So I like to say, and I learned this from our buddy James Orr, everything's on sale. Everything in Denver is on sale right now while interest rates are low. And let's not forget, sellers are a little nervous. The market's in transition. They're not getting price wars to bid up their homes anymore. They're, you know, 0.4% under the list price. That means it's an opportunity for you to maybe get some concessions, buy a property, get something when it's not so competitive as it was last year in the spring, and it's on sale. I can buy a $20,000 nicer property for $100 less every month. Should I be out looking at homes right now, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to leave the podcast early because I should be going and looking at homes.
All right. I think that's a good idea. But when people talk about getting cash flow, like, this is why you can't just look at prices and things that they have to take into a lot more consideration because, yeah, prices are up. But since interest rates have dropped dramatically, hey, $100 a month, that makes a difference in cash flow, especially if we're looking at Nomad and house hack properties with really tight margins. Yeah. $100 a month can be a difference of a neutral cash flow to a positive cash flow putting 5% down.
Yeah, that's $1,200 a year, also known as $36,000 over the life of the loan. If I could save you $36,000 on your mortgage, Chris, would you be interested?
I would.
Okay, this is how you do that.
All right, so if you guys want to take advantage of this, definitely call me. We talk properties. Definitely call Joe. The other thing, I know a lot of people bought properties, you know, 6, 8, 9 months ago when interest rates peaked relatively short term. Consider refining because yeah. I've talked to a couple clients, a couple numbers that Joe has shared with me as well. And a lot of people refinancing were from like 5-ish to like 4-ish interest rate or so.
Absolutely. I've had a number of people refinance because depending on how much you put down, let's say you bought a home in July of last year, you know, that average interest rate was 4.86, but let's say you only put 3 or 5% down. You might've had a rate of 5.25, 5.5, 5.1. Now you can refinance that down to 3.875, 4%. Great opportunity to save money currently.
Yeah. So keep that in mind if you're out there with a couple of properties you bought recently. Might be worth looking at doing a refi or even doing a cash out refi. I've got some equity.
That's right.
All right. So jumping into our first case study here. This is a Nomad property in Arvada. And I'm starting to use two different words to describe what I used to say the same thing. So you've heard me talk about house hacking. Now you're going to hear us talk a lot about Nomad and house hacking. So Nomad is where you go out there and you buy a property as an owner-occupant so you can get that great low down payment and better interest rate because you're living in the property. But Nomad means you buy the place and live out after a year. It doesn't mean that you have roommates. Now, if you add in roommates or tenants to that place, well, then you're house hacking. So my definitions are house hacking reduces your living expenses. And then nomading is you buying multiple properties over the next couple of years to build up a rental portfolio. So you can do nomading by itself or house hacking by itself. Or if you want to put things on steroids, you do nomading with house hacks. So we're talking about a Nomad property in Arvada. Pretty simple, standard house you see in Arvada. It's a 5-bedroom, 3-bath. And the reason we did a Nomad here and not a house hack is because a couple purchased, you know, husband, wife, and they've got 2 kids, you know, probably about a little bit under a year, maybe around 3 years old. That's a tough situation to be sharing rooms with.
Yeah.
Most couples don't want to do that, and especially with like kids. I mean, I don't want to do that. So I talked to a lot of families where they want to go out there and great, they want to build up the rental portfolio, but they want to do the house hacking. Great. Nomading is a perfect strategy. And buying the multiple properties through nomading is what builds long-term wealth, not having some roommates in there. If you need roommates or if you need money to buy the next down payment or you need down payment money to buy the next property, can't say that 3 times fast.
That's a tricky one.
Then house hacking, get some roommates. So these guys are actually on their second Nomad property. They bought a house a number of years ago in Northwest Denver. And so now they're buying their second property to start building up a rental portfolio. So this one in Bonner, Nevada was actually a flip that a couple agents did and they did it. So they did a good job of it. Looks good. And from our perspective, we like it because it should be really low maintenance. Why? Because it's all a lot of its new stuff. So it should be low maintenance for after a year or two, they move out and turn it to rental. It should keep their maintenance expenses low. So we're at about a $430,000 purchase price. Then we did get some concessions at the end of, or at the seller concessions at the closing table, because as always, there were some inspection objection items. But as we talked about a few minutes ago, this was a great time to be aggressive on those inspection objections. And the issue or the credit we got for was for some electrical work. So we got about $2,000 credit so that our buyer could go out there and hire our master electrician, go out there and just do some routine electrical upgrades to get the house up to their living standard and safety standard that they wanted since they got kids and want to turn into a great long-term rental property. So this property was listed higher. We got about a $10K below list price. As I mentioned, we got some good inspection concessions. Also, not just that $2,000 seller credit. We had some items repaired during the inspection objection resolution as well. Our buyers just want to take care of the electrical stuff themselves, which I totally understand on that. So overview of the clients. As I mentioned, this is a second Nomad property for them. They moved out of their first one. And they're doing a 5% down conventional loan on this property. They could have put more down, but they wanted to maximize leverage and keep as much cash and equity from their previous property in the bank as safety nets and to use for future properties. Now, one thing we talk about in the transition of going from one property to the next is sometimes you have to figure, hey, what happens? I can't qualify for my next loan while I'm still living my first property. Because a lot of times, your normal owner rocks, they are selling their current place and turning around and buying a new place. So since our investors are often not doing that, they are typically buying a place and keeping their previous place as a rental. Sometimes it works with their loan options and their debt income ratio and everything where they can go out there and buy the next property. But in this case, our buyers had to go out there and get a lease in place on their current property. And then the lender is able to take that lease and say, okay, great. You're getting, I don't know, let's just say $2,000 for simplicity. You got $2,000 on here. Great. That's going to wash out your mortgage on there. Now your DTI, your debt to income ratio, is great to go out there and buy the next property. So second Nomad property, 5% down conventional with a signed lease on the first property.
Yeah, absolutely. We do that all the time. You move out of that one property, lease the property that you're moving out of. All I need is a copy of the lease, a copy of the initial security deposit or initial rent check. We'll give you credit for that rent towards the property you're moving out of. 5% down on the new place. Works great.
All right. And so we're showing our deal quadrant, which we did our first class on a few weeks ago. So this deal was found on, I'm going to do a drum roll. Where was it found, Joe?
The multiple listing service.
It's amazing you can find deals on that still.
I hear all the time there's no deals out there on the MLS, but experience proves otherwise.
Yeah. Now, we're obviously being a little sarcastic here. So we talk about finding deals in the MLS, networking, wholesaling, and lead gen, and they're all good ways to find properties. But keep in mind, something like 95 to 97% of all residential properties trade on the MLS. So I like to fish where the fish are because I have a higher chance of getting a fish. So as you're out there looking for properties, don't disregard the MLS and don't badmouth it because a lot of people find good deals on there and build some really good long-term wealth. All right, so jumping into the property numbers here. So this is a 5% down conventional loan. Purchase price was about $430,000. Acquisition costs were about somewhere right around $3,000, maybe a little bit lower because we did get that $2,000 credit, about $1,500 in loan cost. So with everything all together from earnest money, closing costs, down payment, their total investment was actually just over $26,000. So $26,000 and change. And their interest rate was right around like either 4 1/8 or 4 1/4. I forgot the exact amount, but I put 4 1/4 in here to be a little bit on the higher side. And they did a 30-year fixed, which I think is the best way to go when you're doing investment properties. Mm-hmm. So that's what almost everyone does. I was talking to you, Joe, last week, like, you hardly do 15-year loans, right?
Very rare to do a 15-year loan on an investment property. I mean, let's talk about that for a second. A lot of people come up to me, they're like, hey, I want this, you know, 15-year loan on this investment property because I want to pay it off a lot faster. Okay, great. You can. You're going to get no break on your interest rate. All right. So think about that for a second. The big reason to do a 15-year is because you're going to get a discount on your interest rate. You get no break on your interest rate when you're doing an investment property. Reason being, it's actually higher risk for the lender if you do a 15-year, because now that property is negatively cash flowing.
Oh.
And so we have to count on you to put in some cash flow every month from your outside job. Whereas on a 30-year, that property is cash flowing at least a little bit, 50, 100, 200, 300 bucks. It's actually lower risk for the lender to do a 30-year on an investment property than a 15-year. So there's no benefit. It's not priced to give you any lower rate. You can do a 15-year, but there's really no huge benefit to doing it.
All right, so getting back on here. So yeah, 30 years are the way it goes, just said, especially with investment properties, no break on interest rate. It keeps your DTI lower for future properties. And of course, you can always put extra towards a principal if you want to. But if you're on a 15-year loan, I don't feel like putting that difference in there this month.
Too bad. You have to.
So it's just a good, I think it's a good buffer there. So this is another reason it's always good to talk with your agent and your lender and get everything figured out before you go out there and start putting offers in properties, because these are details you're going to figure out, because investing, it's a game of chess, not checkers. We're going to be thinking 4, 5, 6 moves ahead. So this is stuff we talk about and we discuss with our clients to make sure that we are doing a good roadmap out there.
That's exactly right.
So monthly income, this is a 5-bedroom, 3-bath house in Arvada. It's, where was it? It's a little bit northwest of Old Town, a mile or two from there. It should pull about $2,500 a month in rent when they move out in a year or two. That's in today's rent, because that is what 5 bedrooms are going for. Might be a little bit higher, might be a little bit less. My guess would be right around $2,500 a month. And they might do some room-by-room renting to get the income higher. But I'm going with a simple bread and butter. Hey, rent it out to a family for $2,500 a month. That's the rent they'll be getting right around there. Taxes are about $1,650 a month. Property insurance about $1,450 a year. I'm sorry, taxes are about $1,650 per year, not month. Insurance about $1,450 per year. He will be self-managing just to save money. Repairs and maintenance, we put in 8%, which is about 1 month's worth of rent, so about $2,500 a month. And assuming that he'll be paying water and soon he moves out, which would be about $1,500 a year, give or take a few bucks. So plug this into Joe's spreadsheet, then moved over to the cash flow tab, and I took a screenshot here. So the total annual expense are about $7,000, giving him a net operating income of $22,100. Well, he has annual mortgage payments about $24,000 a month. So that leaves him a negative cash flowing property of $2,015 a year. Uh-oh.
I don't think that's the end of the world, because he only put 5% down.
Exactly.
Keep that in mind, guys. He put very, very little money down. Just because you're going to have to contribute $150, $170 bucks a month, that's just deferred down payment. All right. Had he put down 10, 20, 30, 40%, you'd be making a lot more cash flow. But how long would it take you to save up 10, 20, 30, 40%? He only saved up 5%.
So as Joe said, you can look at it as you're getting, you know, your tenants are financing your down payment. And then plus what happens if you're negative cash flow about $2,000 a year, your biggest expense, which is your mortgage, 30-year fixed, the payment rate is the same today as it is in 26 years from now. What happens over time? Usually rents go up.
Generally, that's been my experience.
Yeah. So if go out a couple of years, rents go up. The other thing that often happens on these loans is that PMI will drop off. So between those two, a lot of times by year 2, 3, 4, we're seeing a positive cash flow. And so that time in market of getting a property and subsidizing your down payment makes sense if you're good with that elevated risk and you're good with keeping a lot of money in the bank. Now, I asked Joe to let me borrow his phone / calculator because I wanted to do a quick calculation here. So one of the things Joe mentioned earlier, we teach that new class on that cash flows on everything. One of the things we will be talking about in that class is what the tax benefits of owning real estate are, and that is known as depreciation. So I'm doing some really quick math here. And my disclaimer is I'm not a CPA. Anyone out there needs to go talk to their accountant to make sure they're doing it. But assuming the purchase price of $430,000, you can depreciate the value of the property, which is the building, but not the land. So really rough rule of thumb is about usually the purchase price, take 85% of it. Usually that comes out to be about the worth of the structure. Now, if you're downtown in a really hot area, land values can be greater, but a lot of times about 85%. So $430,000 divided by times 85% is $365,000. Depreciation period is 27.5 years. So that gives you a tax benefit of about $13,300 per year. Now, I just use for simplicity an average tax rate between federal and Colorado, about 25%. I think that's a fair ballpark.
Seems right.
So we're going to take that $13,300, multiply by 25%. And according to my non-professional calculations, that should be about a $3,300 benefit that he'll get back on his tax returns of whether him not owing money or a tax refund or offsetting some other tax he has. Well, $3,300 and change in tax benefit, well, that's greater than $2,000 in the negative cash flow. So if you take in depreciation now, wow, well, now there's a really good chance that's cash flowing about $100 a month. So if you get hung up on that negative cash flow, learn the true way you analyze deals and make money in real estate, because it can change your way of thinking. It still may or may not be good for you. This strategy is definitely not for everyone, but it's good to know all the facts so you can make the decision. So come to those classes, talk to me and Joe. This is the stuff. These are the details we like to talk about.
Absolutely. I think that's such a great point on that depreciation is more than just cash flow. And we're going to talk about the other points outside of depreciation in that class. It's going to be really important.
So on this tab here, Joe, any other numbers or returns that we want to talk about here?
You know, I think the GRM, the gross rent multiplier, as a straight investment property, it's not great, right? 172%. I really like to find 120, 130, maybe 140 GRM. But what makes this work, the 5-year after-tax return, I don't have to have a great GRM because I only put 5% down. All right. So I only put 5% down. It's not a great cap rate, not a great GRM, but the power of leverage, I can still make 25% of my money over the first 5 years. That's super worthwhile in my mind.
And the other reason, a lot of times you compare cap rates to what we buy for Nomad and House Hack properties, almost every single time, every single deal I've done so far as a house hack, the cap rate's been lower than what we've done for a straight investment property, because the best investment properties have the higher cap rates. But usually those are properties that the buyers or the owners don't want to house hack or Nomad in. Joe, you own a bunch of rentals around here.
I do.
Would you want to Nomad any of those?
No, I'm happy with where I live.
Yeah, exactly. And so a lot of times people say, great. It's not all about getting the best numbers. It's making sure it works for you where you live, your situation, your work, and all that. And a lot of times these properties, that's what they want. And the numbers still make sense in the long run as you go 10, 20 years down the road.
That's exactly right.
So our next one is going to be the opposite of the spectrum. This is we're talking about a rental. And surprise, surprise, this is another condo that we bought in Aurora. Why? Well, because from a pure investing standpoint, we're putting 20 or 25% down as an investor. This is where we are consistently seeing the best numbers with the most inventory and the properties that need the least amount of work. So I can't think of a property we've bought over that needed more than about $5,000 worth of work, usually carpet and paint at most, some handyman stuff. Maybe a couple dollars more. I might be forgetting something, but it's usually very low repairs and they're very easy repairs, not full rehab properties. So this one is out here in South Aurora, not too far from Buckley Air Force Base. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom condo. And you'll hear, if you go back to the last few roundup webinars, we talk about these types of properties a lot. Why? Because they're giving the best cap rates and cash flow
now. They make money.
Yeah.
They make money. Simple enough.
Now, if you don't want a Nomad or house hack and you want the best cash flow, I'm going to say, great. These are areas that we're going to look at because this is where we're most likely to see the best deals around town right now. So the purchase price is right around $190,000, a little bit more than that, but I just was rounding down for simplicity. And our buyer on here paid cash for the property because he had enough cash saved up and he had a couple other rentals fully paid off and he wanted to pull the equity out of there to go out there and buy the properties. Why? Well, cash offers in these investment properties, great, that is a stronger offer than usually doing a financed offer. Not always, but hey, if we can do cash, great, we'll do it. One more card stacked in our deck. Doesn't mean you can't do financing. We've bought a ton of these properties this year through financing, and Joe's been the lender that's done by far the most of those, so we can get them done. But hey, he wanted to do cash, and his whole goal here is to build a portfolio up of about, I think it was like 5 to 6 paid-off rental properties, because that's the cash flow that this investor needs to allow him and his family to transition into an early retirement. So this is just his 3rd rental property to get him towards his goal of, I think it was about 5 or 6 properties, and that we can start transitioning out of his job. So as I said, his goal is to get a paid off portfolio for early retirement. So deal quadrant where we found this property, again, it was the MLS. Lots of good properties out there because that is by far where the most properties are at. So here is Joe's spreadsheet lined up in here. Purchase price 195, acquisition costs were only $686. And that is like, I think, the exact amount or very close to it. Well, why is it so low? Well, it's because there were no loan costs. There are no appraisal fees. So if you pay cash, hey, it saves some closing costs.
It absolutely does. Yeah.
And he did need to do some repair costs. We found that during inspection, new AC, a couple other stuff. So needed like the new AC, which is big, about $2,500, $3,000. And then one of the walls need to be painted, a couple things need to be repaired. It was all very simple stuff. About $4,000 in total repair costs, about $53,000 total in his investment. Now, one thing I want to hats off to this investor is because we closed on a Friday. And then that next morning, which was a Saturday, he'd actually already taken his property manager through. They walked it. They had their plan going out there. And he talked to his property manager, hey, what needed to be done? And he went in there on that Saturday and Sunday. He did some of the small stuff himself. He had his HVAC guy lined up to come here and do the AC. I think that happened on that following Monday. And basically by that Sunday or Monday, his property manager already had the place listed. And they already had people, giving rental applications or calls within the next day or so. So within 2, 3, 4 days of closing on the property, great. He already had the place ready to go. He has property manager lined up. And this is a mistake I see a lot of people make where they don't get their ducks in a row. And you definitely do. And it brings up a different question. If there needs to be some repairs and stuff, should you do it yourself or should you hire someone? I like to hire people.
I think Joe does too. Yeah, it's way more profitable for me to be doing loans, to be doing real estate, to be working with other buyers, and I can hire a professional. Can I buy the Home Depot book and figure out how to tile a bathroom? Yes, I can. It would take me a year and cost me five times as much than hiring a professional and look terrible, right? Hire someone, guys. Don't, unless you are a contractor, unless you have that skill, unless you have that expertise, and most importantly, unless you enjoy it. Don't plan to go work on a property because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to want to go do it. Hire people, guys. That is the best piece of advice I can give you about renovations. Hire a professional. And you don't have to hire the most expensive guy, right? There's plenty of handymen out there that'll do quick, easy repairs. You don't have to have the whole house painted. Hire a handyman that can do what you need. $4,000, more than enough to do these minor repairs.
Yeah, and I agree too, because the other way to look at it is, great, if you're going through it yourself to save money, I understand that. But you usually have a job or family and you're a slower worker than a professional.
Yep.
And so, great, this guy, he did a couple things himself, just very easy stuff, and he enjoyed, doesn't mind painting a wall. Cool, that's a Saturday morning his kids helped out with. But the HVAC, he hired a professional to do it. If you do it yourself, it takes you 3 weeks. Well, what's the cost there in your time and the property not being rented versus having a professional do it done in 3 days? When all of a sudden, you can get it rented 3 weeks earlier. Well, if that's $1,500 in rent right there, well, that probably makes up for a big difference in paying that professional, not even considering your opportunity cost with your time. All right, so moving back on the spreadsheet, $195-ish purchase price, about $53,000 in. That's acquisition cost, down payment, and we're including that $4,000-ish dollars in repairs. Don't need to worry about the interest rate and mortgage terms. He rented this out for $1,795 a month, and that's right what we see over there in those 3-2 condos, $1,800, $1,850. Taxes, $960 for the year. Property insurance, about $600 a year. He's doing a property manager. Not sure if it was 8 or 10%. So I stuck in there $2,154, which I think is 10%. Repairs and maintenance, we're assuming 5%, even though my guess is probably lower because it was in relatively good shape. And HOA dues about $3,600 a year. So why is insurance lower? Why is repairs and maintenance lower? Well, that's because we're paying the HOAs. So they take care of some of those bigger capital expenditure issues. Roofs and siding and sidewalks. And they also lower your insurance because they take care of a lot of the liability for the exterior of the building. So again, pros and cons to HOAs. Like them, hate them. But if you want the best cash flow in the Denver metro area right now, you should be looking at condos and townhomes with HOAs.
Absolutely.
Which have HOAs. And if they don't have HOAs, I don't know if I want to usually buying a condo without an HOA. That would scare me.
Yeah, I'd be nervous.
Seen a couple properties where it makes sense, but it throws some curveballs in there. All right, so going on to the next tab in Joe's spreadsheet, the cash flow tab with the results, about $8,400 a year in annual expenses. less is, and then annual, where's my net operating income? $12,500. And so that's a 6% cash on cash return. Puts it about a 6.5 cap rate because, hey, he has a property manager. That's going to lower the net operating income. So 6.5 cap rate, this is a solid deal out here in the Denver metro area.
Yeah, this is great. Look at this GRM, guys, 110. This is a property paid 190, rented for whatever it was, $1,800 a month. Great deal. But check out your after-tax return. Not as good as that Nomad because you put a lot more money down. In fact, you put 100% down. All right. Still strong GRM, still a great deal. It just makes sense for your own personal preferences. If you want to put money down, more, less, whatever it is, it's up to you. Great deal. Great transaction. Don't get stuck just on one metric. Like the other Nomad deal, oh, it's 170 GRM. That's not worth it. I've got to have a 100 GRM or better. No. You've got to understand, if it's a higher GRM, what else are you getting? Are you putting less money down in order to get you a good return?
And looking at 5-year after tax return, we have screenshots, not the spreadsheet pull up. I think I put lower than, I think I put 3% in for rent appreciation and price appreciation. So that's why I think it's a little bit lower than we normally see, just because I was playing around with those numbers. And I'll definitely double check, but I think that's why it's a little bit lower. And the fact that it's paid all cash.
Cash, right.
But I put some different assumptions in there just to, I was showing a couple people how that impacts the returns. I think that's what I exported. So, talking a little bit difference in the, you know, types of properties for that makes great rentals versus what usually makes a great Nomad, balancing your investing and personal preference. Funny story on this property. This is in a, standard investor complex that we buy a lot of properties in out there in Aurora. So I was not doing the final walkthrough, but Preston Newberry, he's another agent here at Urquhastle. He was doing the final walkthrough with a client the day before closing, because we always like to walk through the property the day before. And, they're usually 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, you're in and out, just making sure no pipes have busted, no windows, nothing major has happened. So they're walking the property, and this is a ground floor unit. They open, there's a little storage shed on the patio there, and they just open up, just checking things out. And they found two people sleeping in the storage shed there. So it scared the crap out of them. And it scared the crap out of everyone, as you can imagine, because they were sleeping at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. These were, a couple homeless people living in there. And Preston said his initial reaction, he's like, oh my gosh, there's like dead people in there just because they were asleep.
Right.
Luckily they weren't, but scared the crap out of everyone. And this is one of the, I'll say, fun things that comes along with being a rental investor is that, hey, you want to invest in the stock market? Wonderful. You don't deal with this stuff. You want to go out there and get better than average stock market returns? This type of stuff you deal with sometimes.
So you mean to tell me it's not as glamorous as it is on Million Dollar Listing on TV?
Sorry to burst your bubble, Joe, no.
Huh. Well, maybe I'll cancel my class for my real estate license because I thought it was just all riding around in Bentleys and, wearing nice suits. Apparently not, huh?
No. That's only if you flip properties.
Oh,
that's,
okay.
That's
all right.
The TV
I'll
show
have to be a flipper
of.
Then.
Yeah,
all right.
That's
great,
what you
great.
Do. You aren't making fun of flippers, making fun of the TV shows out there,
right,
guys.
Right, the TV shows, not the flippers.
There are some characters out there in the TV shows. So I want to highlight that just because, great, you want to invest in property. There are real-world things you have to deal with. You want to get the best cap rates, the best cash flow in Denver. Well, great. That usually means you're getting a higher reward. What comes with higher reward? Higher risk. And with real estate, higher headaches. So this is a prime example. So, other than giving them a quick scare for a minute and then them having to spend like 2 or 3 hours calling the police, waiting for them to show up and filing a police report, whatever, closing the property, didn't faze the investor, has a good story to tell now. But that's the type of stuff that can happen out there. All right, so that wraps up for this month's Roundup webinar for the month of June. A couple upcoming classes here. As Joe mentioned earlier, we are doing a brand new class called the ROI Quadrant, so the Return on Investment Quadrant. Cash flow is not everything. That's happening August 6, 2019. And then we're doing a property analysis spreadsheet on August 22nd. I'd recommend if you guys can make it, come to these classes. Please RSVP. I expect both these classes to be maxed out. And that's because it's some really cool content. Plus, Joe is doing a major update to your spreadsheet.
Yeah, if you've been using the spreadsheet that we've had, it's, you know, we're on version 5 right now. And, you know, folks that have known me for a while, version 1 had a lot of great things and it's just been improving. But version 6 that I'm working on right now, I think is going to be great. It's going to have the ROI quadrant built into it. It's going to have some more variables that you can plug in, but it's going to still be really simple. My goal is to keep it something that you can fill out in less than 3 minutes. You fill out the highlighted fields and then it's going to give you all of your results. So I want to keep it really, really simple. It's, I like to say idiot proof, because you can't change all the formulas. You can't change all the fields. You can only change the fields that are those variables. And then you go to the other end and it tells you, is this a good deal or a bad deal? So we're going to have a big update for that. I think it's going to be really beneficial for everyone out there.
So we don't have an exact release date for the spreadsheet. Definitely by that August 22nd, the spreadsheet class may update it or may release that the ROI quadrant, but the people that get the first update will be people in class, and then sooner after that, we'll be releasing it online.
I can tell you, we'll be releasing it Thursday, August 6th at 2:59 p.m., right before the class. I should have the final touches done by then. No, I'm kidding.
Well, deadlines are good.
Right, we'll have it done a little bit early, I'm sure.
No, but seriously, if you guys can make the class, make it. If you can't, just be on the lookout, because we'll be doing a lot more of these classes in the future, and especially a lot more stuff with Joe's spreadsheet. So keep your eye on emails for the updated spreadsheet, for future webinars, and for future classes. So keep your eye on our calendar and Joe's calendar. Go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/calendar, and that will take you there. So one last reminder. At the beginning of the episode, we talked about the Denver Investor Success Summit. Last reminder for this episode, block off October 12th on your calendar, and then be on the lookout for some emails on going to denveriss.com. Buy your $20 ticket before, I think it's the end of August, and you'll get a 2-for-1 deal, so it's a great thing to take advantage of. All right, guys, well, that wraps up. Again, my name is Chris Lopez, and I'm an agent here at Your Castle Real Estate. So if you need help buying an investment property, whether it's a house hack, nomad, or traditional rental property, reach out to me. That's what I like to do, and I like to do that longer-term modeling on some of those details we talked about. And if you need a loan for financing or to refinance since rates are dropping, definitely reach out to Joe Massey at Castle & Cook Mortgage. Our phone numbers, websites, email addresses, all the other contact details will be in the show notes. Or if you guys have been listening to this for a while, you know how to get a hold of us. So, Joe, thank you for joining me again today.
Chris, I always appreciate it, man. One of my favorite highlights of the month. Appreciate being on the podcast. And everybody out there, have a great July. And we'll see you for the July roundup in the month of August.